Well, hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Minister Mike Show podcast. You know I am glad to be with you again here today, and you know what today is, right? Yeah, come on now. It is a glorious day that the Lord has made, and I, for one, man, I'm so glad to be in it. We got a lot to talk to you about today, man. It is a lot going on, and I want to continue to encourage you, man. Forget about all this stuff that's going on around you. What's going on in your heart? What's going on in your head, man? Are you focused on the Lord? Because he got you, man. He got you. Regardless of what's going on, he got you. And it don't get no better than that. We're going to talk about that. Stay tuned. When you hear that our president has capped immigration at 7,500 and then says 7,000 of those will be white South Africans, you have to pause and see what's really going on. These are people fleeing a nation where they thrived on apartheid. Now they're running towards an administration that seems to be flirting with its own version of apartheid. We see the same spirit in the abolishing of DEI programs, in the rise of Gestapo-like agencies such as ICE, and in policies that echo a dangerous nostalgia for the old order of white supremacy, white control in America. Make America great again. Don't lose hope. Don't lose faith. Stand tall, stay faithful, and keep shining, because truth always outlast tyranny. Up next, news with Karen Massey. What up, Kate?
Hello, I'm Karen Massey, keeping you up to date with all the latest news. Dozens of relief workers from the U.S. have been deployed to Jamaica to help during the aftermath of Hurricane Melissa. The powerful Category 5 storm with 185-mile-an-hour winds slammed into the island nation last Tuesday, triggering floods, mudslides, and destroying homes and other buildings. Jamaican Minister Desmond McKenzie said the country has been devastated.
Black River has been totally destroyed. Hospitals, schools, police stations, fire stations, great majority of our infrastructure has been affected. We have over 20,000 Jamaicans in shelters, and most of those persons will have to remain in shelters because a lot of damage has been done to homes. Clearing of roads, etc., have started. So we have, in fact, started to do some work as we have a long journey.
At the time of this recording, at least four people were confirmed dead in Jamaica, while 20 others died in Haiti from flooding. Winds had died down to 115 miles per hour when the hurricane hit Cuba. The storm was not expected to have an impact on the U.S. as it continued traveling north in the Atlantic. It's been four long weeks since the U.S. government shut down, prompting 25 states to sue the Trump administration. They filed a lawsuit in Boston trying to stop the cutoff of food stamps and other food benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, known as SNAP. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins told CBS News her department doesn't have the money for SNAP for November, and she refuses to use a $6 billion contingency fund to cover part of the cost.
On October 10th, we said there will not be SNAP funding on November 1st. On October 24th, we said it again. We've been talking to the governors all along the way. None of that has changed. To fully fund November, and you mentioned this, but to fully fund it would be $9.2 billion for the 44 million Americans that receive the SNAP benefit. And 12 times the Democrats have voted to keep the government closed. All of this ends tomorrow or today or Thursday. If the Democrats would vote yes, the $9.2 billion would flow. The air traffic controllers would get paid.
Food banks across the nation have reported a major surge in people showing up. Many are federal workers who aren't getting paid. The Trump administration said it planned to lay off more than 10,000 workers because of the shutdown, but a federal judge in California has extended a temporary ruling barring 40 federal agencies from laying people off, while unions who represent those workers mount a legal challenge to the layoff order. Congressional Republicans are imploring Democrats to pass a bill to reopen the government, but Democrats are holding fast, saying they want Republicans to extend Obamacare health subsidies, which are due to expire. They say without them, insurance premiums will skyrocket, leaving millions without health care. The police chief of Millbrae, California, is being accused of living at the police station. Police Chief Eamon Allen rose to the rank of captain after being with the San Mateo County Sheriff's Department for 20 years. The county provides police services for Millbrae, and in 2023 tapped Allen as Millbrae's police chief. Last year, he bought a house outside Boise, Idaho, nearly 650 miles away from his California job. Millbrae's city manager filed a complaint saying beds that recently showed up at the police station don't have proper permits. And he believes Allen is staying there during the week, commuting to Idaho on weekends, and charging taxpayers. San Mateo County Board of Supervisors President David Canepa told KGO-TV that's a big no-no, and he wants an independent investigation.
If someone is living out of county or out of state, they have to pay for their own lodging, meaning San Mateo County is not a Holiday Inn. These are taxpayer dollars, and so we need to make sure that what's taking place in those facilities really is for the good of the taxpayer. That means people aren't living there.
KGO reported that two areas with beds at the police station have had their locks changed, and maintenance people and public works employees don't have access. There's also a question about safety, because the rooms don't have fire-resistant walls or an alternative exit to use in case of fire. There's also concern about Allen getting to Millbrae from Idaho in a timely fashion in case of a crisis like an earthquake. So far, Allen isn't talking. The city inspector has posted a notice at the police station saying, please stop using rooms for sleeping. And finally today, the entertainment industry has lost another hitmaker. This time, it's Anthony Jackson, the legendary bass player, who was only in his 20s when he played on the OJ's hit For the Love of Money back in 1974. People who know the song will never forget the iconic bass line that he created on the spot during the recording. Also played on Billy Paul's hit, Me and Mrs. Jones, Roberta Flack's Feel Like Making Love, and Madonna's Borderline, along with songs by a host of others, Chaka Khan, Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, Peebo Bryson, Carly Simon, and George Benson, and more. In 1975, Jackson created the contrabass guitar, which has six strings instead of the typical five. Recently, he had been suffering from Parkinson's disease, but no cause of death was given. Jackson, who was 73 years old, will certainly be missed. And that's it for today. I'm Karen Massey, keeping you up to date on the latest news. Now, let's go back to the man that we all know as Minister Mike.
Thank you again, Karen. And as usual, always pertinent, always professional. That's News with Karen Massey.
I'm at Mets, man, and I'm doing that little duck walk. You know, I don't know if they do it anymore, but back then they did a little duck walk where you're basically in your drawers. I was in my boxers, take your shirt off, you're pretty much naked. So I'm doing the duck walk. As I'm doing that, you see personnel back there annotating all those tattoos that I had on my back. Got a huge one on my back that's still there on my body, on my face. So they pull me aside. They're like, hey, you need to see the commanding officer here because of your gang-related tattoos. And I was like, okay. they're like, hey, make sure you stand at attention outside of this door. And I'm like, I didn't know what attention was. They're like, just stand squared away. And I immediately went into the little cholo, like kind of leaned back a little bit, tilted my head back. They're like, no. They squared me away. Hey, your hands go here. Your face goes here. Straighten up your head. Like, man, before you go in there, you go in there respectfully. We'll do, no worries. Go in there and talk to the commanding officer at MEPS. Lady in a nice military uniform sat me down, heard me out, heard my story. She had a very thick country accent. Man, what's all this gang stuff that you're talking about? Like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. What's all these tattoos? What's this all about? And I try to explain it to her more and more, and then that's when she goes, I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you an opportunity. Do not disappoint me. And I said, ma'am, I promise you I won't. And what's cool about that, once she signed that waiver and allowed me to join the United States Navy, I found her later on in my career in 2008, so it was about 10 years later. She was a retired captain. She was working as a civilian at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. I showed up in my chief uniform because that year I was promoted to chief. And she recognized me right away, you know, the hug, you know, the tears started coming down, the joy. And I told her, I told you I wouldn't disappoint you, and thank you for the opportunity. No doubt in my mind that that opportunity saved my life and has done so much for my family and for me to this day that I truly, truly appreciate. So now my goal is to find her again. Now that I made Master Chief, I retired as a Master Chief. And again, the Navy has done so much for me that I can't even begin to speak on and just thank her once again for that opportunity.
Let me talk to your heart for a moment. Everybody's carrying something. We're all walking around with stories that nobody else knows, tattoos, hidden, whatever it is. So before you judge somebody else, remember, God didn't judge you that way. He gave you another chance and another and another and another. Somebody out there needs that same grace from you today. Don't write them off. Lift them up. The same mercy that you are asking God for is the same mercy somebody's praying you'll show them. Give that second chance, and you might just be the reason somebody's life turns around. Next, think about it with Miss Anita.
Hello, Minister Mike. Today, I just want to share something that I've been thinking about. This past Sunday, my pastor preached a sermon on three kinds of burdens. There's the public burden, the kind everyone sees, the struggles we can't hide. Then there's the private burden, the one we carry silently, afraid that if it ever became public, it might break us. And then there's the semi-private burden, the kind David and Bathsheba carried, the one that's hidden for a while but eventually finds its way into the light. As I listened, I started to think about my own burdens, not the kind you can weigh on a scale, but the kind that live deep inside your soul. When I was a young woman, I kept a list on my refrigerator from 5 a.m. until 10 p.m. every night. And I had it up there every single day. It was a list that never seemed to end. And of course, there's some things that I wasn't able to complete, but I've always had to start all over again the next day. I'd get up, shower, put on makeup, fix my hair, and get dressed decently for the day before even coming down to fix breakfast. You know, my children never, ever saw me in the house looking sloppy or with rollers in my hair. Someone once asked me, why do you do all of that every morning? And I said, because you never know when someone might knock on the door or when a call might come from the school. I'm not the type of mama or the type of woman to show up in a robe and slippers or hair undone. That's just how I was raised. Even after the children were grown and my marriage became a shadow of the past, I still came home to more work, committee meetings, church work, part-time jobs that often required full-time effort. being a woman takes a lot of work, especially the kind of work that keeps your spirit together. Sometimes I think about the part of me that's been neglected, the part that loves music, laughter, and quiet moments with a special friend. I spent so many years making sure everyone else had what they wanted. Horses, birds, hunting dogs, Cadillacs, you name it. If my husband said he wanted it, I'd ask, can we afford it? And if he said yes, I'd say, then get it. Somewhere along the way, I forgot to give myself permission to want anything that I desired. I told myself I'd take care of me later when the children were grown and when things settled down. But later came and the children were gone and the marriage ended. Life changed and I realized something. I had built a pattern of putting myself last, a pattern that taught others to expect me to always be there for them, no matter what it cost me. And that, my friends, is a burden all its own. So today, as you go about your list, whether it's on your refrigerator, in your phone, or just running through your mind, ask yourself, am I carrying only my share, or have I forgotten to make room for me? This is Miss Anita, and I hope I gave you a little something to think about. We'll get a little bit heavier next time.
Miss Anita, I got to say it, man. Thank you for always giving us something to think about. And thank you for listening to the Holy Spirit. So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Man, it ain't gonna get no better than that. It's gonna be all right. Minister Mike presents Who Dat? John Lewis. When you hear the name John Lewis, you don't just hear a man's name. You hear a movement. You hear footsteps across the Edmund Pettus Bridge echoing through time. You hear the rhythm of faith, courage, and conviction that shaped America's moral compass. John Lewis was born in 1940 in a little place called Troy, Alabama. The son of sharecroppers, he grew up picking cotton under the weight of Jim Crow, but his heart was turned to a higher call. Inspired by the preaching of a young Martin Luther King Jr., John Lewis decided that the gospel wasn't just meant to be preached, it was meant to be lived. As a teenager, he was denied entry into the local public library because of the color of his skin. He didn't shout, he didn't fight, he made a promise. He said, I'll get in there one day, not just for me, but for everybody. That movement sparked a lifetime of holy rebellion against injustice. By his early 20s, Lewis had become one of the original freedom riders, riding buses across the South to test segregation laws, buses that were often attacked, burned, and met with violence. He took beatings that would have broken most men, but he stood firm in what he called good trouble. Necessary trouble. And then came Selma, 1965. Lewis led over 600 peaceful protesters across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, marching for the right to vote. They were met by state troopers with clubs and tear gas. Lewis's skull was fractured that day, but his spirit was not. That march, that bridge, that courage moved a nation and led directly to the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. John Lewis went on to serve more than three decades in the U.S. Congress, representing Georgia's 5th District. From his seat in Washington, he never stopped preaching the gospel of justice, hope, and faith. He called the conscience of Congress not because of politics, but because he carried the cross of moral responsibility, a reminder that faith without works truly is dead. He often said, "You cannot be afraid to speak up and speak out for what is right. You have to be bold, brave, and courageous." And for those of us in the African American community, John Lewis showed that real courage looks like courage rooted in prayer, shaped by scripture, and powered by love. For the Christian community, John Lewis embodied Micah 6:8. "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God?" He didn't just walk humbly, he marched boldly. Even in his final days, battling cancer, he made one last trip back to Selma, this time to cross that bridge not as a protester, but as a prophet. He smiled, waved, and reminded us that the bridge between earth and heaven is built with faith and service. So when we ask who that man who changed a nation through peace and perseverance, who that who turned pain into power and trials into triumph, who that who turned pain into power and trials into triumph, that's John Lewis, the boy from Troy who showed us that faith without fear can still move mountains and even change America. This has been Who Dat, celebrating Black excellence, faith, and legacy. I'm Minister Mike, reminding you that courage is contagious when it's powered by Christ. You could be saved right now. Everything that you've gone through, every wrong you've done, every sin you've committed, Jesus already paid the price. You don't have to carry the guilt, the shame, or the burden any longer. All you have to do is ask him. Just call on his name, Jesus. He's waiting for you, arms open wide, ready to forgive, ready to restore, ready to make you new. It doesn't matter where you've been or what you've done. Grace covers it all. Salvation is a gift. All you have to do is receive it. Say, "Lord, I believe. Forgive me, save me, and come into my heart." And just like that, you're free. Saved. Next, 5 minutes of empowerment with my pastor, Rod J.
5 minutes of empowerment, Pastor Rod J. Hello to each and every one of you from wherever you are in the world. God bless you. Let's go ahead and get started. I want to today bring something to your attention, and I want you to think about it. Whenever there are battles that take place, especially wars, conflicts that take place that we often hear about, I want to ask you this question. Is it just one person, or is it a group of people? Is it just one person, or is it a battalion? Is it one person, or is it a unit? Is it one person, or is it a whole army? I want to suggest that typically 9 times out of 10, that it's more than just one person. I say 9 times out of 10 because, of course, there are battles that are individualistic in nature. However, even with that being said, there are still people who are in your corner, as there are people in the other corner. So you never fight anything by yourself. And this is where I'm going today, because I think that one of the challenges that we end up having in terms of the battles that we face is the challenge of understanding that this is not just about you, that you don't have to fight this battle by yourself, especially if it's a struggle that you have, especially if it's something that you can't shake, something that's getting the best of you, something that won't allow you to sleep at night, something that has you agitated during the day, that has you aggravated. You don't have to face the battle by yourself. You don't have to fight the battle by yourself. You know, part of that is being transparent. The transparency can be scary, especially when you have to admit, I can't fight this battle by myself because it's too much for me. I need help. And sometimes it's not knowing how to ask for help. Also, the challenge is who to ask. Because maybe there have been times in the past where you've asked for help and they couldn't help you, or you didn't know how to ask. And so you find yourself stumbling and mumbling and not being clear, therefore making yourself even more agitated and aggravated. But I'm going to suggest to you that whatever the battle is that you're facing, let's not face it by yourself. I know you're strong. I love it. I know that you are gifted. I know that you're capable. I know that you're grown and you faced things by yourself before. So why can't you do it now? Well, we all need someone. We need someone to fight with us. We need someone to pray with us. We need someone to encourage us. Sometimes we just need someone to be a sounding board. We can just talk things through. Well, whatever the case may be, you're not supposed to fight it by yourself. Yes, you have to, in some regards, protect yourself, because you don't need everyone in your circle, because what you'll find is that there'll be people who, while you're fighting, will be fighting you. And trying to fight a fight on both fronts can be difficult and challenging. But I do want to strongly suggest once again, you don't have to fight this battle by yourself. That's why there are groups that are here that have been formed and crafted to help you to get through whatever that may be. Even in terms of congregations, that's why we gather, not just to get what we need for ourselves, but to sharpen one another, to spur one another, to encourage one another, to empower one another. So I just wanted to share that with you. That was heavy on my spirit, because I don't want for you to fall into the trap. And this is what something that has been said, which is together we stand, divided we fall. And so the enemy would love nothing more than to separate you, isolate you, and to make you think that there's no one that will help you, which is why suicide is so strong today, because there are those who believe that there's no one that can help me. I'm by myself and no one cares. It's never the case. And maybe this is for someone who needs to hear this, who may be on the verge of doing just that. So I'm glad that you're sharing this, because everyone needs someone and everyone is necessary. So if you find someone who's fighting a battle by themselves, don't just look at them. Don't just talk about them. Help them. Partner with them. Yeah, pray with them. See how you can help. And yes, there'll be times in which people will say to you, oh, I'm fine, I got it. But the reality is, no, you don't. So those are my words for you today. You don't have to fight this battle by yourself. There are people who have been equipped, who God has placed around you to help you, whatever that battle may be. Listen, I'm Pastor Rod J. I love each and every one of you to life and never to death. You all have an amazing day. Until next time, peace.
Let me ask you a question. What would you say is the furthest distance in this room? You say from floor to ceiling, door to door, wall to wall. I would say the furthest distance in this room is about 12 to 14 inches. That's how far it is from the head to the heart. He's going, you may know facts about God, but that does not mean that you are his child. You may know the book, but you don't know the author. You know what breaks my heart? Is that heaven and hell are separated by 12 to 14 inches. Tasting God's goodness versus tasting God's wrath is separated by 12 to 14 inches. just because you know facts about God, that does not mean it has traveled down to your heart just so that you actually trust Him.
Can I talk to you for a minute? Peep this. We are currently living in a moment where bold actions by our government are reshaping the rules, and you need to know what's at stake. First, the administration is preparing to set the refugee admission ceiling at just 7,500 people this fiscal year, a dramatic drop from previous years, and nearly all of those spots are being reserved for white South Africans of Afrikaner ethnicity. Meanwhile, a broader healthcare agenda is quietly underway. Under the new budget and policy initiatives, tens of millions of Americans risk losing insurance coverage, especially through cuts to Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act. For our community, African American Christians, this matters deeply. Why, you may ask? Because we are heavily impacted by policies that reduce access, raise costs, and shift burdens onto the most vulnerable. Black and Hispanic individuals are more likely to depend on Medicaid than white counterparts. When insurance goes away, medical costs skyrocket. Chronic conditions worsen, families suffer, and our churches, our neighborhoods, feel the pain. And for all of America, when one group's rights erode, when the social safety net is weakened, the entire democracy suffers. If access to care becomes a privilege, not a right, the promise of freedom and equal dignity for all weakens. But we are not powerless. Here's what you can do. Get informed and vocal. Know the numbers and the policies. Talk about them in your church, small groups, Bible studies, and families at the dinner table. Mobilize in your community. Make sure people register to vote. Please show up at town halls. Hold our elected officials accountable for health and justice for all. We haven't done that. You can't do that if you don't vote. Support one another. If someone in your church loses coverage or faces mounting medical debt, help them. Organize funds. Advocate for access. Bring the church into the action. Pray with purpose and act with resolve. Our faith teaches us that loving our neighbor is not passive. Faith without works is dead. Don't stand idly by. This is the time to stand up. Stand up for justice, for mercy, for the vulnerable. So hear this. Don't assume it won't affect you. It will. It is. And if we do nothing, we are complicit in our own decline. But if we rise, rise together in faith, in community, in truth, we can turn the tide. Let's refuse to sit silent. Let's act. Let's stand. Let's reflect the light of Christ in this hour when it is truly needed. This is Minister Mike. Where you at?
Things people learn too late in life. One, the less you say, the more your words will matter. Two, don't take everything personally. Not everyone thinks about you as much as you do. Three, when you focus on problems, you'll have more problems. When you focus on possibilities, you'll have more opportunities. Four, no matter how much it hurts now, someday you will look back and realize your struggle changed your life for the better. Five, you meet people for a reason. Either you need them to change your life, or you're the one that will change theirs. Six, never be afraid to try something new. Life gets boring when you stay within the limits of what you already know. Seven, you will never truly know the value of a moment until it becomes a memory. Eight, once you begin to take note of the things you are grateful for, you begin to lose sight of the things that you lack. Nine, if you do not have control over your mouth, you do not have control over your future. 10, life is a mirror and will reflect back to the thinker what he thinks.
You are listening to the Minister Mike Show, where it don't get no better. Got one for you. What city is considered the birthplace of modern gospel music? Come on. Atlanta, Birmingham, Memphis. Nah, bonk. It is Chicago, Illinois. Chicago is considered the birthplace of modern gospel music because in the early 20th century, it became the center of a powerful musical movement blending spirituals, blues, and jazz. During the Great Migration, thousands of African Americans brought their church traditions north, transforming worship and music. In the 1930s, Thomas A. Dorsey, often considered the father of gospel music, I say until somebody prove me wrong, he's a creator of gospel music, pioneered this new sound at Chicago's Pilgrim Baptist Church. His blend of sacred lyrics with blues rhythms inspired artists like Mahalia Jackson, setting the foundation for gospel as we know it today, vibrant, soulful, and deeply rooted in Chicago's cultural heartbeat. This is Minister Mike, and right now, we're stepping into that part of the show where we shine a light on the ones history didn't want you to know about. Today, we're talking about a sister whose needle told stories that history tried to erase. A woman who stitched dreams into silk and satin, even when the world said she didn't belong in the room. Her name? Ann Lowe. Ann Lowe was born in 1898, down in Clayton, Alabama. Her mother and grandmother were both dressmakers, black women who turned fabric into art for the wealthy white families in the South. Ann picked up on that craft early. She wasn't just sewing. She was painting with fabric. By the time she was 16, Ann had already designed a whole wedding gown collection after her mother passed away. 16, y'all, that's what we call purpose at work. She moved up to New York to attend design school, but get this, they made her sit in a separate classroom. Why? Because she was black, of course. But Ann said, that's all right, because while they kept her out of the room, her talent kept her breaking in the door. She opened her own shop in Harlem, later moved to Madison Avenue, designing gowns for the social elite. We talking about the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the DuPonts, high society women who couldn't get enough of her work, but didn't always want to give her the credit. And then came 1953, a big name wedding. You might have heard about it. Jacqueline Bouvier and John F. Kennedy. Ann Lowe designed that wedding dress, the one seen in newspapers and magazines all around the world. But guess what? When the press asked who designed it, they said a colored dressmaker. No name, no shine, just silence. And when the dress got ruined in a flood days before the ceremony, Ann and her team worked around the clock to remake it. No complaint, no cry for attention, just excellence. But that's how it was back then, and sometimes still is. Our brilliance gets borrowed. Our genius goes unnamed. Ann Lowe kept sewing, kept shining, but the price of being great in a world that won't see you, it's heavy. By the 1960s, her business had struggled. She lost her shop, faced debt, even lost her eyesight for a time. But she still kept designing, because this was more than just fashion. It was her calling. In her later years, she finally got some flowers. The National Museum of African American History and Culture features her work to this day. And in 2021, the Metropolitan Museum of Art gave her the recognition she'd been owed for almost a century. So the next time somebody asks, who designed Jackie Kennedy's dress? You tell them. It was Ann Lowe, a black woman from Alabama, a visionary, a quiet storm with a sewing needle. The story of Ann Lowe reminds us that sometimes greatness doesn't need a spotlight. It just keeps creating until the world finally notices. This is Minister Mike. And you already know, we don't just tell stories. We tell the truth that other folk don't want you to know. And lo, here's that Minister Mike minute for you before we get up out of here. No matter what this world throws your way, the troubles, the trials, the headlines, the heartbreaks, remember this, God is still in control. Lean on Jesus, because when everything else feels uncertain, he remains the same. So lift your head, keep your faith strong, and walk knowing that joy is still ahead. It's coming your way. Until next time, keep shining, keep believing, and keep depending on the one, Jesus. And I'll see you right back here next week. Here come that music. Yep, here it is, that music, man. The worst time of the show. I say it on the radio show. I say it on the podcast because it is. I love this, man. I love both. And I hope that we are able to do something, man, say something, man, to encourage you, to make you stronger in your walk. So you know what I got to do, man. I got to ask you, do something for no reason at all that causes someone else to smile, and you will have done your deed in making the world a better place today. In the immortal words of my little big brother, David Cleveland, we got you, man. We got you. This is Minister Mike. Until next week, see ya.